91.3 KXCI Tucson, real people, real radio. Hello, Tucson. Thanks for joining us today at 91.3 KXCI, your community radio where we all stay connected. This is Kathy Harris with my co-host, Aspen Green, and we're bringing you Broad Perspectives Radio, a program by women, about women, but for everyone. You can hear more of our programs on our Broad Perspectives podcast page at kxci.org. You know, I can't believe the impressive women we have on our show, and today is no exception. Dr. Christina Colosimo not only works in various roles at the U of A as a physician, and she's won awards and recognition for her work, but she's also initiated programs in gun violence prevention. So, Aspen, tell our audience about this amazing woman.
Dr. Christina Colosimo is a clinical assistant professor in the Division of Trauma, Surgical Critical Care, Burns and Acute Care Surgery with the University of Arizona College of Medicine. She is the Director of Injury Prevention and Outreach and the Associate Pediatric Trauma Director. Dr. Colosimo developed and launched the hospital-based gun violence prevention initiative at the University of Arizona, which has over 30 community partners, as well as a school-based gun violence prevention program that has been introduced in three separate school districts. Throughout her training, Dr. Colosimo has received various accolades, including 2023 Women in Medicine and Science Award and recipient of the 2024 John M. Stapleton Jr. MD Injury Prevention Research Scholarship. She was awarded a proclamation by the Tucson Mayor in 2024 on her gun violence prevention work. She is the chair of the Injury Prevention Committee of the Eastern Association for the Surgery of Trauma. She is also on the Tucson City Community Violence Advisory Board and chairs the School Violence Subcommittee. Wow, that's a lot of things to do. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
And we always like to ask our guests, because we know a lot of people are not originally from Tucson, knowing that you did your residency in Colorado and your fellowship in New Jersey, I'm going to say that you probably are not a native Tucsonan. Am I correct?
You're correct. So my father was in the military. We kind of moved around a lot when I was young, but the majority of my family is in Los Angeles. The reason I moved to Tucson is because there was such a need in this community. And in New Jersey, we had a huge problem with gun violence. And, you know, they had started a gun violence intervention program when I was there, and I got to help with that. And so then when I came here, it was wonderful because there were so many community partners that really wanted to start something here. And so it was really nice for me to come into this environment and have such support in building programs here.
Do you plan on staying in Tucson now that you're here?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really invested in the community. And, you know, as you mentioned, I have a bunch of school-based programs, and so I want to kind of see them to fruition.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about you. When did you know that you wanted to become a surgeon doctor?
My mom was a nurse, and she actually was an OR scrub, and so she took care of a lot of people that were in the operating room, and so she used to come home and tell us about what she did every single day, and she said that when I was like 3 years old, I said, "Mom, what's the hardest job there is?" And she said, "A pediatric cardiothoracic surgeon." So I was like, that's what I'm going to be. I didn't make it quite that far, but I ended up becoming a trauma surgeon.
That's different. I've never heard of anybody thinking, I want the hardest job there is out there. That says a lot about you. I would like to explain to our audience the difference between a DO and an MD. And I know that's kind of changed over the years, but is there any difference in scope of practice or training?
So there's no difference in scope of practice. We're all equal in the United States, but it's just your training that's a little bit different. MDs are an allopathic training. DOs are an osteopathic training. And so we incorporate a lot of whole body concepts, like your heart is connected to your lungs. And so in order to fix everything, we need to make sure that everything's in order. Like I said, it's not a really change in the scope of practice. It's just really in your training.
Okay. What inspired you to specialize in trauma and surgical care? Can you share any experiences that influenced your career in that field?
Yeah, absolutely. So as I mentioned, I was originally trying to go for cardiothoracic, and I was doing a lot of that when I was a resident in training to be a surgeon. And I was in a case with a cardiothoracic surgeon. We were doing our third CABG for the day. And as they were doing the CABG, the aorta ripped. And so there was a massive amount of bleeding. Everybody was kind of focused on saving this patient. When they needed help, they called for a trauma surgeon to come in the room and assist. And the trauma surgeon was just amazing. He came in the room very calm and collective, just took over the whole case and really saved that person's life. And it kind of changed my thinking because originally I was like, I want to be cardiothoracic. And I was like, wait a second, this person just walked in the room and saved the day. I want to be that person. I want to be the person that people call when they need help. So that's why I decided to be a trauma surgeon. And trauma surgery is really great because you don't focus on an area. You, again, take care of the whole body. So if that person is shot in the lung, you operate on the lung. If they're, stabbed in the liver, you operate on the liver. If they're in a motor vehicle accident and their leg is partially amputated, you could do the amputation. You basically save that person's life. You do what you need to do and you operate where you need to be.
You have to be a fast thinker, and hopefully, you have a great team with you.
Absolutely. It's all about the team.
Yes. How did your experiences as a trauma surgeon shape your views on gun violence?
As I mentioned, I did residency in Denver. And in Denver, we have a lot of people that get into a car accident. And so that's our main trauma is from people in car accidents. So I decided that since I was going into trauma, I wanted to be able to be that person that knows how to handle everything. So I decided to go to a fellowship where they had a high penetrating rate. High penetrating rate means high amount of stabbings, high amount of gunshot wounds. So I went to Camden, New Jersey. Just a phenomenal program. They have a huge amount of gunshot wounds and stabbings that happen there. Because of that, I got to work with a lot of these patients, and a lot of them had distrust of the healthcare system. They would come into the hospital with gunshot wounds and say, I want to go home instead of being treated. And so it was a lot of gaining trust. And then they started a gun violence prevention program there. And it was just starting up when I was there. And so you would talk to the patients about enrolling in the program. And they had these violence interrupters, which, if someone died and the family members were saying, we're going to go out and retaliate, you could send these credible messengers, people from the community, go out into that community and talk to them and say, this is not the way. And let's stop this gun violence. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. And so then when I came to Tucson, we would have people who were shot, and maybe they were only shot in the leg and it didn't really hit anything. And so then they would discharge them. And sometimes these patients would say, well, I was just shot. What do you mean you're letting me go home? But the hospital is so full here. They didn't have the resources to be able to do anything else for these patients. I was like, this needs to change. We have to figure out a better way. And I was lucky enough to meet Lance from Goodwill and Brittany from the Tucson Police Department. And we kind of talked. And we really built this hospital-based program. And through Goodwill, they have so many amazing resources. And they've been in the communities for so long that when I sat down with Lance and I was like, well, we need someone to help with bereavement. They're like, great. Here are two community partners that help with bereavement. I was like, okay, we need to help with rent utility because I'll have patients that say, I can't be in the hospital. I need to go home and support my family. So there were a couple of community partners that would help with rent while you healed and substance abuse. They had community partners. So we really brought in all of those into the program through Goodwill. And so that was just a really great asset for us.
So it's a great referral system, basically.
Absolutely.
And so people can get aftercare. Because often when you leave a hospital, I left a hospital and felt like, whoa, I feel like I'm on my own now. What do I do? And it's kind of a very scary feeling to feel
Absolutely.
like you don't know what to do. Talk to us about the devastating impact of youth gun violence and the essential role Banner plays in supporting victims and the community through education and outreach. I know you developed and launched the Hospital-Based Gun Violence Prevention Initiative at the U of A, which has the 30 community partners, as well as the School-Based Violence Prevention Program in the districts. Tell us about those programs and how they work.
Yeah, absolutely. So I kind of mentioned a little bit about the hospital-based program. We also, through Banner, we do outreach to anybody who wants to do Stop the Bleed training, any school, police department, anybody who wants to undergo that. We do it for free. We'll go anywhere, even hours away, to teach Stop the Bleed. We go into schools and talk about drunken driving. We do a big fall prevention program. And then specifically with gun violence in schools, I started a program here. And that actually stemmed from, I was on call one night and I got a call that there was a shooting at a middle school party. I said there was 5 kids shot. So we were getting everything ready for the 5 kids. I get another call. One of the kids was dead on the scene. I was like, okay, we got 4 kids coming in. I get another call. Then another kid died en route. So, okay, we have 3 kids coming in. One of those kids who came in went immediately to the operating room, had really devastating injuries to his lung. So after surgery, actually had to go on the ECMO unit to act as his lung while his lung repaired. And I talked to his mom every day. He was in the hospital, I think, probably about a month. Finally came off the ECMO unit, got the breathing tube out, was like a normal kid again. And, you know, everybody was really happy. Got to take care of him. He left the hospital. And then he was shot in the head a couple of months later and died.
Whoa.
And it was really heartbreaking because I talked to his mom every day, took care of this kid, 13 years old, so young. And it's not the first time that I've heard this. And so I did a lot of research on other programs that were out there that did gun violence prevention, like the Shady Hook Promise. The NRA has a program. I looked into all these programs and took what was good from them. And then I looked into the DARE program. Why did DARE fail? You have police officers talking about just don't do drugs. Well, that's not as simple as that. They don't understand the cultural aspects or the family dynamics. And you have police officers that are can be punitive sometimes talking to these kids. And so we wanted credible messengers, healthcare workers to come in, nurses, doctors, EMTs to come talk to kids about what we're seeing every day. We brought in community partners, like I talked about before, that had insight into their communities. We talked about what could be culturally relevant for those different school districts. When we went onto the reservation, we talked to them about what is happening here and what can we talk about that's important to you. Went into the middle schools, what is important to you? One of the middle schools said, our kids are posing online with guns. They're 13, 14-year-olds posing online with guns. Someone actually got shot. Talked to them about risks of playing with guns and posing on social media. And we're like, absolutely, we will do that. And then with those conversations, was as soon as we talk about what's happening in Tucson, we talk about what's happening on a national level, how America is 9.5 times likelier for your kids to die from firearm violence than Canada, our neighbor, who's the second highest developed country. 60% of these kid deaths by guns are suicide. And so just telling them about it and then equipping them with skills like Stop the Bleed. So if someone is shot, that they can help in these sort of situations.
Thank you for all that information. It's about time we will take a little music break. And when we come back, we'll talk more about the impact that you're having on students in the school talks and the rise of violence amongst the youth. So let's take a little music break. Okay, Kathy?
Yes, we will. But boy, I just have to say, as I listen to these stories you're telling, my stomach is just in a knot. I admire what you do so much. I can't even imagine doing the job that you do. And here, on top of the job that you're doing, which sounds incredibly difficult, you're taking the time to organize these community things, which go more to the cause of the problem rather than to the effect. Thank you so much for doing that. Now, the song that you have chosen is called Just a Girl by the band No Doubt, which the lead vocalist is Gwen Stefani. Do you want to tell us why you chose this particular song?
I think Gwen Stefani is a wonderful artist. The song kind of is a little bit ironic because she's talking about how she's a girl, she can't do anything. Often, as a woman in surgery, I'm the rarity. There's only about 20% of women in surgery. We're still fighting tooth and nail. When I was a resident for my first 2 years, I didn't have a female mentor. When I was pregnant, I got asked no less than three times if it was okay for me to walk up the stairs. This is from other doctors. So that's why I kind of, I love the song because it's like, yeah, we're just women, we're just girls, but we do amazing things and we really push barriers.
The song actually was written by Gwen Stefani and Tom Dumont. Just a Girl is about Stefani's perspective of life as a woman and her struggles with having strict parents. She wrote the song after her father reprimanded her for driving from her bandmate's house late at night. And you'll hear her comment about that in the song. And she's commenting on her first experience with writing a song by herself. She explained, "I just wanted to write a song to express how I was feeling in that moment, and I never in my wildest dreams thought anyone would hear it." Just a Girl received positive reviews from music critics who commended the feminist lyrics and Stefani's vocals. The single is typically regarded as being the breakthrough that popularized the band No Doubt. So let's listen to Just a Girl by No Doubt from their album Tragic Kingdom. 91.3 KXCI Tucson. You're listening to Broad Perspectives Radio, and we're returning to our interview with Dr. Christina Colosimo.
That was a wonderful song. I'm so glad you chose that for today. In your visiting the middle schools and high schools and talking to the students, do you feel like they are listening? Are your talks being received well?
Yeah, absolutely. We've been doing a survey before and after with the students. One thing that was significant in our survey findings was them being able to answer questions and not saying, I'm unsure. They would say, are you a victim of gun violence? That would be a question. And a lot of them, they said, I'm unsure. But after the intervention, a lot of them changed their answers and either said no or yes. And so either that's them understanding what gun violence is or trusting us. And I would say that maybe it's probably more them trusting us because we did a lot of post-intervention talks with these students. And we had one of the kids who changed his answer. He originally said, gun violence didn't affect him, to gun violence did. And he said, my father was shot. And even though my father was shot and, I've had to deal with it my whole life, it wasn't until we really talked about it and I understood what's happening in the United States that I really realized, wow, this really, really has affected me my whole life. I think we're making a difference with the kids. And every time we talk to them, we ask them how we can make this better. And as I mentioned, we do stop the bleed training with them. That actually came from them. The first thing we wanted to do was just talk to kids about what's happening in the United States. And, after we went and talked to them, they said, well, this is great. Thank you for coming and talking to us. But if my mom, my grandma, my friend gets shot, how am I supposed to help them? And so we said, you're absolutely right. We should be giving you skills to help people out. And stop the bleeds, not just for, gun violence. If it's their grandma falls at a sports game and cuts open their leg, it equips them with the skills to stop the bleeding at that aspect too.
How young do you think we should start talking to children about gun violence and gun safety? Because I would assume that is our necessary path to prevention.
There's so much research out there in gun violence and what we should be doing and what we should be teaching. The problem is very little people are going out and teaching. And so that's why we actually created the program. And so, because of that abundance of research, I was able to kind of look at where we really should be targeting. We should be targeting middle school and elementary school because after they get into high school, they've already had these ideas around guns. That's why we go into middle schools, and we've actually worked with the University of Arizona Department of Education to make sure all of our materials are at the right grade level for them to understand it. And they've shown that with Stop the Bleed training, that even fourth, fifth graders, they can understand what a big bleed and a small bleed is, and they can save lives. And so we really should be going into elementary school and teaching these. We're not trying to scare anybody. We're not trying to take anybody's gun away. We just want to equip them with knowledge so that they understand that they really shouldn't be picking up the gun if mom and dad aren't around. They should never have their finger on the trigger. And then they need to know that if that gun goes off and they accidentally shoot their friend, their brother, their sister, little kids are so smart. I have two
Sure.
fourth graders at home. Man, they are amazing kids and they know so much.
It would be nice if we got secure storage laws passed because that would also be a good preventative in that area. I don't understand how you balance your clinical duties with educational responsibilities because you're still a practicing surgeon, am I correct?
Yeah, I'm a full-time practicing surgeon, but it's so worth it because, like I said, every time I teach, I learn new things. We have such good responses from the students. 73% said, we want to be taught this. And so there's such a huge need.
How can the public better support doctors and organizations working on this issue?
I think the biggest thing is, one, talk to your school district. Tell your school district we want to let doctors in to talk about this with our kids. I think a lot of the administrators sometimes feel like, oh, we don't even want to touch the issue. The parents aren't going to go for this. But in the 200 kids that we've already worked with, only four parents have opted out. So that's huge. I mean, parents want this. We've talked to
Sure.
people in the PTA. And so it's just a problem with misconception. Just saying, like, we want this, we want you to come talk because there's a lot of stuff out there for parents to talk to their kids. But I will say, as a parent myself, it's really hard. How do you bring up gun violence to a 6-year-old? How do you bring up gun violence to a 10-year-old? It's hard. And I know a lot of parents, myself included, don't want to have these conversations, but we know we need to. So if you allow credible messengers like doctors to come in and start these conversations, I think that's huge.
If somebody wanted to be more aware of the programs that you're doing or become part of them, is there a way that they can contact you? Do you have a website? How would they get a hold of you?
Anybody who wants to know more about the program, please email me directly, or you can contact the University of Arizona Department of Trauma Surgery. They can get a hold of me at night or day. And so happy to go anywhere, any school district, talk to anybody about gun violence prevention. I've been down to Phoenix. I've actually talked to the state of Tennessee because they're actually trying to create a gun violence prevention curriculum for all of their schools, which I think is amazing. So I'm happy to talk about this with anybody and share all of my work with anybody who wants to use it.
I think it's so important that we do this starting from kids at a young level so that they grow up with this awareness and consciousness on what to do and how to prevent and how to act in certain situations. It's amazing. Does this all give you hope in fighting gun violence?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, if I could never have a child brought in shot, that would be amazing. I never want to hear that a 3-year-old picked up mom, dad's gun and accidentally went off.
Right.
That's what I see every single day,
Yeah.
and I don't think we need it, and I think we can take precautions to make sure that stops happening.
Well, thanks so much to you. Thanks so much to the other women and men who are working on trying to get legislation changed. But education and awareness is so crucial. I cannot thank you enough for what you do for this. What you are doing makes you a superhero, as far as I'm concerned. And where do you find the time? And speaking of time, we're out of time for today's show.
Unfortunately, we are out of time, but it's really nice to hear that there's so many hopeful things going on in this area. And Dr. Christina Colasimo, thank you so much for taking time out of your very busy schedule to talk with us about your work today in preventing gun violence. You do so much for our community, and we really appreciate it. And thanks to all of you out there for being with us. You've been listening to Broad Perspectives Radio, and you can hear more of our programs on our podcast page at kxci.org. But for now, stay tuned because next up we have Boom Goddess Radio with Jennifer Davis Page. Enjoy your Sunday, and we'll see you next week.